Simplified podcast brought to you by Training Simplified. My name is Matt, and today I am really excited to be joined by Scott Greenberg. Scott is an author and speaker specializing in the future of work and leadership. He is an author who has written books such as The Wealthy Franchisee and more recently, Stop the Shift Show, which is all about transforming hourly workers into top performing teams. I got the pleasure of hearing Scott recently speak at a manager leadership conference for Mendocino Farms. And after hearing him speak, I just knew that I had to have him on the podcast and introduce him to you. So, Scott, welcome.
So good to see you again.
thanks for coming on and joining me. You're in LA, right?
Yes.
So I'm just south of you. We're very close. Yeah, that's great. That's awesome.
I'm sure we've sat in many of the same traffic jams here in Southern California.
Probably so. That's the case. And Scott, you know, I know, you know, that our audience is really hospitality, restaurant focus. And what's cool is you have a background in that, correct? That's kind of the world that you come from.
Yeah. My dad was a serial restaurant owner growing up as early as I can remember. And some were franchises, some were his own. So Italian restaurant, Southern food, ice cream, sandwich shop, like all. So I was around that sort of chaotic life, you know, growing up. And then after myself, I was just doing motivational speaking for 13, 14 years. And then I opened up a couple edible arrangements franchises, which it's not exactly a restaurant, but it's food. And the health department, of course, would always show up on Valentine's Day when, you know, it was most disruptive. And as a speaker, I've had exposure to countless restaurant brands, you know, including Mendocino Farms, obviously. So I'm around the world. I'm in the world. I have felt the world.
Yeah. I think edible arrangements definitely counts as a hospitality brand.
For sure.
Yeah. I mean, that's like all about taking care of like people's like special moments, right?
Well, you'd think that would be obvious, but for a lot of owners and a lot of employees, that actually was not the case, but that was sort of our unique value proposition. We made it not so much about the fruit baskets, but about the experience, about meeting their emotional needs, and that really served us.
Nice. So your recent book that I got exposed to at this conference, Stop the Shift Show, very important to emphasize that F. That's very funny. It's a great name, great title.
Thank you.
Just give me like the synopsis of like the motivation behind it. Like what prompted you to be like, the world needs this information. The world needs this book. What was your motivation there?
Well, certainly when I opened up my retail businesses, my edible arrangements, in the beginning, those first few years, if you'd have asked me the most stressful part of the business, I would have said my team, my people. Like it was really difficult. And again, I'd been doing motivational speaking for 13, 14 years. So I kind of gave myself a little too much credit. I went a little bit cocky about my ability to inspire my team. I thought I'd have these motivational Jedi mind tricks, right, that I could use. Things like there's no I in team and, you know, ridiculous comments like that, that totally didn't translate. So it was really humbling. And so I had to really focus on what to do with my team, not only to save that business, but to save my reputation as a speaker. I don't want to just be some hack. And I certainly remember, you know, my dad's complaints as I was growing up, hearing him talk about employees. But also after my first book came out, The Wealthy Franchisee, I started doing just so much speaking at events with a lot of restaurants, especially. And the biggest pain point that business owners were sharing with me was managing their teams. And so knowing that that was a pain point, I thought there's an opportunity there. So I started researching all these work environments that work with hourly employees and are killing it and getting great retention from them, great performance from them, and decided I wanted to write a book about that and help solve that problem for people. So that's my focus today.
And so it seems you found that it was less about, I guess, the platitudes like no I and team, and more about, I mean, I guess a framework, for lack of a better word, or like a blueprint that you can follow. Would that be correct to say?
Yeah, that's certainly part of it. In fact, we're creating an online course right now based on the book that's really a system. If you think of, you know, EOS as a system for business owners, we're creating a system to help managers get more from hourly employees. So that'll be out soon. I'll come back on the podcast and promote that when the time comes.
Nice.
But it really is a system about doing it. And it's also important to understand what it's not. You cannot buy loyalty. You cannot buy culture. You cannot buy high performance or retention. And that's what most business owners and managers try to do, right? Whether it's, you know, signing bonuses or, hey, we're going to buy you a pizza today or give you gift cards or those kinds of hard incentives. Like those things are great for creating short-term bursts of activity, right? Maybe to attract someone to apply, or maybe for a few days to get them to upsell, but it doesn't last. It's much more about something deeper. It's much more about the human side. It's less what they get and it's more how they feel. Just like with customers, right? The experience we give them matters more than just the product or service we give them. So it's about how can we create emotionally satisfying experiences, best in class workplaces that are inspiring, that speak to the values of employees, that make them feel good, besides just giving them stuff, right? It's cheaper to make them feel good than to give them raises and bonuses and buy them things. And so it's understanding your employees emotionally, psychologically, socially. What do they need without us judging them for needing these things? What do they need? And then how can we incorporate that into our operation? You do that, you're going to outperform all the other employers, have better employees who last longer.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Definitely believe in like a culture first approach to achieving business results. Let's say I'm a manager. I'm the new struggling manager, okay? And I'm in this organization and I'm just like, this is a mess. I'm in over my head. I'm losing people left and right. What's the first thing you would tell me to do?
It's a great question. And the fact that you're noticing it and sort of asking for help already puts you ahead of most struggling managers, right? Most struggling managers and business owners, it's about busyness, just surviving each day and getting through the shift. Right. So the first thing I would tell you to do is to look in the mirror, to identify how are you possibly adding to the problem. And that requires humility. It means putting your ego aside and be willing to say, if I have multiple employees who are not performing well and I'm having these problems, it might be partially a management problem. And I know a lot of people listening to this are already feeling defensive because right. They don't want to believe that. They want to believe that kids these days, young workers, are broken.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they're not. But I'm saying until they get the best management possible, until you yourself are at maximum capacity, you'll never know how good they can really be. So I encourage managers to first look in the mirror and say, how well are you managing your own thoughts and emotions? What biases are you bringing to the workplace? What assumptions are you making? And I'll give you an example. I wrote an article for Nation's Restaurant News about how to improve the customer experience. And one of the tips I had was having employees who are working the counter try to identify sort of the emotional state that customers are in, then try to match those emotions. If people are playful, be playful. If they seem quiet and they just want to get it done, then just stick to business, right? So I got this scathing message from a guy a few days later, who sent me this email saying, you're telling me I should turn my employees into armchair psychologists? I can barely get them to show up, let alone think at those levels. Have you ever had any real experience managing employees? I'm like, yes, I have. Then I thought of a certain profanity that I didn't email it to him, but I thought it. And then I took a step back and just tried to have some grace from this guy. And I think that he's struggling so much that it's a trigger for him.
Yeah.
But he has no belief whatsoever that his employees can do any better, right? So here's the thing. It's not that I want to invalidate his experience, but I also can't invalidate what I experienced running my businesses and all the really great managers and business owners who I've met and who I've written about. And so I think that we all need to kind of understand what are our own biases and what are our own triggers and what is our belief system and how is that getting in our own way and stopping us from having the influence we want. That would be the first place we need to look.
And then I love it because, well, and not to plug our thing necessarily, but we worked with this brand and created a training for them that was this basically compliance HR training. But what we did is we wanted to elevate it. And one of the reasons I was drawn to your book is we called it, have a great shift, right? Because it was instead of being like, survive a shift, instead of being like, here's the bare minimum you needed to know to just like be legal. Cause that's the tone of most compliance or HR training, right? Is like, here's all the things you don't want to do so that you can be compliant. We wanted to take the approach of like, how can you make this dynamic? And it really came down to how can we all enjoy a shift together and really thrive? And it came down to a lot of that checking in and, being able to recognize and regulate your emotions. and having a manager who could recognize and regulate and co-regulate the people.
And every manager, every business owner, they're like, you know, well, I want my employees to be accountable.
Yeah.
And I think they're too entitled. And I agree, we all should be held accountable. And none of us are entitled to anything. And that includes business owners and managers. You know, we want people to be good just because we pay them, just because we hire them, just because we want them to. We have to earn that, right? And we have to hold ourselves accountable. And especially when, if you're a leader and you're on top, you may not be getting the feedback. There might not be anyone who's pointing out your blind spots. And so all of us are either an asset to the culture or we're a liability. And so that's why I think it's important that we hold ourselves accountable and remind ourselves we are not entitled to loyalty or retention or high performance. We have to earn it.
Yeah. And that starts with the top.
Yeah. Yeah. Or look, you might be a manager who works for an owner and, you know, who knows what your relationship is with that owner. So you start with yourself.
Yeah.
At least say, so where do I have control over myself? What are my thoughts? What are my beliefs? What could I be doing differently to increase my level of influence? And you might find some solutions there. Especially, look, if you have just one or two underperforming employees, well, it might be some mishires, right? You got some bad apples in the team. But if this is a chronic problem, yeah, you could just blame the whole generation, right? Which is the lazy, easy thing to do.
Yeah.
Or you could say, you know what? Maybe I'm not leading at my best. Maybe I haven't taken the time to have empathy, to understand the labor market. You know, we do plenty of research on the consumer market to figure out what are the products and services they want? What is the pricing they're willing to pay? We do all that research so we can market and sell and serve that market. We need to be equally attuned to the labor market because that's also dynamic and constantly changing.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important.
You know, I have a kind of specific thing I want to ask you about that. I'm excited to hear what we have to say about it. Because, you know, we talk about culture building in an organization, right? And that is a lot of what your world is about. And sometimes that seems easy at a place like Mendocino Farms, not easy, but natural, because they're, you know, this founder led, you know, all company owned, or at a place like Chipotle, where I was for many years, you know, we were mission driven brand, founder led for a long time, and instilling culture and inspiring people with the vision of sort of the brand was sort of natural. But now, you know, I'm working with some like franchise owners who are struggling, who come from a world like Chipotle. This is a very specific real situation I'm working with. They come from a place like Chipotle that was mission driven, had this like strong culture, and they're wanting to instill that in their franchise world. And so they're struggling with being the franchise group, and then the company like owns a bunch of, we won't say the name, but a bunch of a bunch of chain operations. So they're struggling with like, how do we instill culture as our business, White Street Ventures LLC or whatever they're called, and then also people not understanding that they're a part of this brand. How as a franchise owner do you build culture and instill culture kind of with those dual tracks?
There are two related but separate cultures in a franchise system. There's the system itself, right? So all the franchise owners and the head office, right? The way they get along and the values and sort of what the brand stands for. But then there's the culture that the franchisee themselves are creating within their own stores. And in every franchise system, you're going to find some stores with really happy, excited, motivated employees and some locations that are really struggling. And that's the culture that the franchisee themselves creates. Now, if every franchise location in a large system had underperforming employees, then I think you can say, wow, the labor pool really sucks. But that's never the case.
Yeah.
You know, probably 70% of my audiences are franchises, and I meet their franchisees and I talk to them. And there's always just a huge variety of performance, right? And the biggest factor is the franchisee themselves. That's what my first book is about.
Yeah.
And so every franchisee within their own walls, within their own locations, they have the ability to create culture, you know, and it should always, of course, be consistent with the mission and the values of the larger system, but that's not too hard to do. But like at your store, your location, what are the social norms? What are the customs? How do you communicate? What do you tolerate and what do you not tolerate? What do you stand for? What do you focus on? But even there, I think that some, you know, and again, whether you deliberately answer those questions or you ignore them altogether, you have a culture.
Yeah.
You know, culture is like online reviews. We all have them.
Right.
Right. Some are really great and some are terrible. We want it to be great. And so every business has a culture, the best by design, most by default.
Yeah.
And the social norms might be terrible. The communication might be horrible, but the culture might be really toxic. So we want to be very deliberate about creating an awesome culture. And so I think even in a franchise system that can be done, and I did that myself, and we got great results once we made that a focal point.
I love that you mentioned, the social norms and the customs. Do you have any examples from your experience or from partners that you've worked with? You said you've worked 70% mostly with franchise owners. What are some examples of strong social norms and customs that people have implemented that have led to a strong culture?
So one of my clients is a staffing company. So they have franchises all around the country that just, they hate the phrase headhunting, but they do a certain amount of headhunting and they do a certain amount of temp agency work. So they have different locations, but there's one location that just kills it. Great sales, not only, great client retention, but great employee retention, which is as big as, finding clients.
Yeah.
And what this one location does is every morning they have a staff meeting, and a big part of their agenda has nothing to do with selling. It has nothing to do with building numbers. It is about culture. And every day they recite their mission, right? And they recite their values. They discuss it. Then they go around and every employee shares one example of what they did the previous day to honor a certain value. And sometimes they have a value of the day and they discuss it. So everyone shares what they have done and what they will do today. And yeah, it takes a little time, but it keeps them focused on, wow, this is really important, right? Because, this kind of stuff, it tends to be looked at as soft skills, as touchy-feely, right? It doesn't feel as tangible as selling, as, getting on the computer and, doing that kind of work.
Yeah.
And so we brush it aside, and that's when it starts to sink. So, what this franchisee does is has this ritual every single day. I know at Mendocino Farms, they're big on pre-shift huddles, right? Where they talk about values, that kind of thing. All of the businesses that I profile in my new book, they all have some set of rituals that help them out. Qdoba is a restaurant chain that I've worked with. And, like other quick service restaurants, they, have had issues with retention. Not one franchisee, and I believe she was in Colorado, where every Wednesday evening, they have what's called family night. They shut the restaurant down a little bit early, and they have a potluck, not a meal paid for by the owner, but a potluck where all the employees contribute to it. They're sharing, they're interacting, relating as people, not just as coworkers. And that shared humanity creates a bond. And so I think we need to talk about what our culture is, constantly examine it as a reminder, but also because that is a statement from the company itself saying culture matters to us. And that's what creates that emotional bond that employees have to each other and to the company. They can make another dollar per hour working somewhere else, but that sense of family, that sense of connection, that sense of purpose, they're less likely to walk away from it when they're really feeling it and it's strong.
Wow. I love that. I feel like that that 18, 19, 20, 21, 22-year-old, whatever, that is maybe working at that Qdoba or whichever brand it was that does the potluck, the Wednesday night potluck, they'll look back on that in 20 years and be like, that was amazing. That's so rare. I feel like that's like a kind of a life defining thing where it's like, I worked for this company and we just every Wednesday night, it was like family night. And we
In a way it's bad because they're probably going to hate the rest of the jobs the rest of their life because that's so rare. I'll tell you one ritual that I had that made a difference is we would have occasional employee meetings. And I made sure that maybe 10% of the meeting was about the operation of business and 90% was about rebonding the team. And we were on the clock. I paid them for this. It was the best investment of labor dollars I ever spent. We were talking about how we communicated, talking about what matters, talking about bigger picture things. But one exercise we did that brought them to tears every time, we go around the circle, we'd spend 3 to 5 minutes on each team member, and everyone would tell that team member what they appreciate about them.
Right.
What they like about them. So for 3 to 5 minutes, imagine you're sitting there just getting love and praise and positive reinforcement from your team. And most of these people were not getting this, having this kind of experience anywhere else in their life.
Yeah.
And one employee described our workplace as her sanctuary. And that meant a lot to me, right? And as we improved their lives, you could feel the loyalty and the retention. and the better performance. And when we had holidays, which were incredibly stressful, you know, like Valentine's Day, we do as much business as the entire year up until that point in one day, incredibly stressful. And at the end of the shift, they'd be like high-fiving and say, Scott, how do we do? How many orders do we fill? Like they really felt a connection to it because of the relationships they had with each other and because of how they felt about the overall culture. It was the best labor dollars I ever spent.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, I was part of a creative team once, and every week we would come, and one of the things we would do in our meeting was everybody would share, hey, what's something cool that you saw last week that was like, you know, a piece of media or a video or something creative or an ad, and share it with the group and share why you loved it. And that was sort of a ritual that built our culture of like kind of creative innovation. And I always look back on that as like, I feel like we were thriving creatively as like a team when we had a set ritual that instilled that culture. You know, even something simple like that. Like it wasn't even about the vision or the mission of the brand. It was about our smaller team having a ritual that kind of drove the culture of our team, which was to be creative and cutting edge and innovative. So there's layers and layers to like having those customs, those rituals.
And a lot of people, they don't know what culture is. They think it just means being nice to people. Yeah. Or, hey, after work, we're all going to go to a baseball game. Okay, that's fun. People kind of talk. And even like that potluck. I mean, it's kind of social and it's, you know, but it's what are you talking about?
Yeah.
That matters. What happens, right? So, you know, I think at this one Qdoba where they have this ritual, they also make sure that conversations go a certain way, that it's, you know, having fun together is a little effective, but really having conversations about the culture, about the relationships, that is what is powerful. So you're not going to, you know, pizza party your way to a better culture. It's your, you know, culture is made up of two things: having a set of beliefs that we agree on, and then behaviors and rituals and practices that reinforce those beliefs. You know, think of a religion. So people have the same belief system, the same value system, and then they have rituals that reinforce that. When they share these things, they feel tight. There's a bond that's there. And you feel that, you know, with your countrymen. You feel that with a sports team. You feel with your own family. Certain way of looking at the world and behaviors, rituals that you have that reinforce it. That is what culture is, for better or worse. Gangs have cultures. You know, prison blocks have cultures, ways of doing things. And so you want to make sure that you have the culture that you want. And it could only happen when you're very deliberate about it. But you're not going to buy your way to it or pizza party your way to it.
I love that. I feel like that's a really great place to put a bow on it, what you just said. I couldn't say it better. Tell us, Scott, where can we find more? Like if someone wants to hear more, and you mentioned earlier that you have a course coming out at some point. If someone wants to dive deeper into your philosophy on building culture, and hear more of these examples, I know we could find your book, but where else could we learn more?
Sure. So the main thing that I do is speaking. Groups bring me into keynote, teach workshops and trainings, and all the information about that. Information about everything I do is at scottgreenberg.com, B-E-R-G.
Yeah.
My books are available wherever books are sold, obviously Amazon, and other places. But wherever books are sold, you can get them. There's also an ebook and an audiobook for people who prefer to do that. And I'm on all the main social platforms and most active on LinkedIn.
Awesome. Well, if you guys are looking for a speaker for your next conference, a keynote, check out Scott. He was engaging. It was fun. Had the room moving around, had him laughing, and kept their attention for a good amount of time, which is not an easy task to do to a room full of people and hold their attention for a decent amount of time. So props to you. And reach out to Scott if you are looking for a keynote for your next event.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thanks, Scott. Really appreciate it.